coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
Money is the blood that courses through the veins of any business. Revenue is its life-sustaining force. But how does a business that's just getting started get the heart pumping? Most bootstrap, that is, they do it on their own with cash and credit cards, and perhaps with the help of friends and family. It works fine, except when a greater level of cash is needed to move beyond the very early stage. That's where business loans or investors come in. The first is debt. The other involves offering some amount of ownership in exchange for cash, known as equity financing. When a company is looking for expertise, services are provided rather than cash. This is known as sweat equity. How a company decides to finance depends on the situation and the type of business. And there are all types of investment sources out there, from angels to venture capitalists. A relatively new way to get funded is through crowdsourcing. Websites like Peerbackers, Indiegogo, Kickstarter, and Rocket Hub bring small businesses and micro-investors together. And it's not just for startups. A business may simply need money for expansion. Businesses post their requirements, and visitors who care about the particular products or services, typically friends, family, and community members, make a financial contribution. Typically, the entrepreneurs offer products or services their startups sell in exchange for the cash contribution. And the crowdfunding sites take a small percentage of the funds that entrepreneurs raise. So how does a company know when it makes sense to give away a piece of the store? On the other hand, if you're an expert who is willing to work for sweat equity, how do you recognize a good opportunity? Everybody tells. We'll learn all about the risks and rewards of equity financing from today's guest, Danette Marie Rose. She's an expert in financial matters, has taken several businesses through IPOs, and will help us understand the issues involved with equity financing for businesses and investors alike. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or give us a shout at our Minding Your Business Facebook page. And now, before we introduce our guest today, a final clip from our musical guest, Don Johnson of Miami Vice fame, singing Heartbeat in 1986. Heartbeat, I'm looking for a heartbeat, heartbeat, heartbeat. Everyone knows Seattle is a hotbed of activity when it comes to startups. So our guest today is going to talk to us about the ins and outs of equity financing and what to look for if you've been offered equity in exchange for your involvement in a startup. Danette Marie Rose is a financial services professional with lots of experience bringing technology and retail companies through the rounds of funding to IPO. She also has a long track record in personal finance, working for firms like Smith Barney, UBS, and Edward Jones. Beyond her street cred, Danette was educated at San Francisco State and UC Berkeley in business and economics. She even ran for a City of Maple Valley Council position in 2009. Here to share with us her experience and insights on startup equity, Danette Marie Rose. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Well, thank you so much. That was quite the incredible opener.
Do you remember Dan Johnson?
Oh, I sure do. And I was wondering if he was going to be a
Don
little...
Don Johnson.
Yeah,
excuse
a little
me.
Bit like Huey Lewis and the News. And he was.
He was maybe a better dresser
yeah,
at the time.
Right.
So I'm waiting for the 80s fashionista stuff to come back.
Oh, I know.
I mean, we're kind of in that right now. So
we are,
waiting
with
for the guys with the white shirt. I mean, the t-shirts and the white jackets.
Yes, and the blazers.
Kind of. Yeah.
Excellent.
And the tan. Artificial tan. Maybe in Seattle. It has to be artificial. So, Stinnett, you've spent a lot of time working in finance. What do you really like about it? What do you find interesting about it?
Yeah, the very favorite thing for me was to watch an idea become an actual company and then to gather support through dollars and through some very excellent kind of management of the process. Take bigger and bigger steps until finally, from my vantage point, I'd start to see these companies coming through for first and second round of capital, you know, and then finally a mezzanine round, and they were going IPO. And the process was so fascinating to me, I started to trace it all the way back to the first person who founded that company, and who did they actually receive their first dollars from? And then how did it build out from there so that it was a win at the end? And even in one instance at a dinner right before IPO, the treasurer was told that he was inadequate for the team and that if he would be replaced with their CFO, then they would be able to fund the final round and bring it IPO on the timing that was And I was just devastated. I thought, oh my gosh, this guy's he's worked all these years to build this company. Well, no, he himself had his own umbrella package to exit. So he was delighted. He was cashing out and he was free to go build another company on another team. So my interest in it is there's an organic process, but it is backed by dollars. And I find that fascinating.
What do you mean organic?
Meaning, usually, you know, you look at these projects and it's a single idea. It's an aha moment. And they're starting to work that aha moment. Sometimes in their dorm room at college, you'd see them popping out these amazing businesses and then starting to look around. And sometimes it's home. You know, we've seen people create these incredible businesses at home in, you know, not only base garages, but, out of their kitchens. And then,
Snapple. That was starting a Boston kitchen.
Exactly. And then the aha moment turns into something else where they have to start to get some support. Well, how do they get that financial support? Through seed money? Okay, they try that.
Seed money.
Seed money really is the kind of money that someone loves you. And they give you some funding. And it could be a neighbor. It could be a family member. A teacher, someone who's seen you come up through the ranks and does believe in you and believes in you and even in industrial projects, you see this all the time, where there's money being exchanged because somebody's got your back, so to speak.
So they have to, it's more that personal connection that's so important at the beginning.
Exactly. And then what happens is it starts to move to another layer, of angel investors. Now, angel investors can be those same seed investors, but folks start to get some information about what is an equity share grid, how would it look for an angel to invest, and sometimes the angels are teaching the business owner or owners, listen, you know, we're going to be willing to do this one or two times, but you're going to need to go to an attorney now.
Well, tell me the real difference between somebody who just likes you and kicks you a few bucks. Or maybe that crowdsourcing, you know, that gets you
right.
Crowdfunding idea we talked about in the beginning. And somebody who is an angel investor, what differentiates the two types of investors?
Right. The differences really are responsibilities. So for a seed investor, friend and family investor, the responsibility, the expectations are tend to be low. Now, not if it's your mom, maybe, but tend to be low usually.
And then in other words, they don't expect to pay back.
Exactly. And they're not going to make a lot of requirements. And they're not reviewing this as a loan with a percentage either paid back or a percentage of ownership. So then when you start to get into lending and angels, these are the responsibilities start to show up a little differently. And the education of the business owner starts to ramp up as well.
So tell me the difference in your mind between how does the debt work? How do you choose to go the debt route, which is borrowing money and you have to pay it back, and the investor route?
Right. Right now, it's very interesting to see when things came into the recession mode, you did start to see a little less interest from the venture capital side, but you did start to see these venture debt concepts come up. And venture debt is actually an interesting concept. It was called in the past a bridge loan. And one guy said to me when I presented a bridge loan opportunity to him, he said, a bridge to what?
Isn't that typically used in construction, bridge loans?
Well, no. I think there was a time when it was. And what's happened is in these technology companies and other companies, they'd be like, we just need a bridge loan till we can get to. And sometimes they'd forget what it was they were going to get to. And lenders picked up on that, of course, right away.
Because they want results.
Exactly.
Or they want at least to know that somebody's thinking about what those results should be.
Exactly. The outcomes become very important. And this is where the business owner must begin to understand the funder, the funding source's desire for outcomes. They want positive outcomes, and they want them under-promised and over-delivered.
So there are differences between what the angel expects as an outcome and what a VC expects as an outcome.
Exactly.
And can you define those for me?
Yeah, an angel investor really wants to gather together some other angel investors. I mean, they are looking for community also. They want to know if they're going to back it, they have other backers as angels. And then once they get involved, they know they're early in the grid. They know that a share ownership would be diluted, meaning less valuable over time as more people come on. And they make those decisions about how much to fund in an angel round, knowing that. So an angel investor, if they're an active angel, tends to believe they're going to have two winning companies a year. They're going to have two or three companies that are just breaking even, and they're going to have the rest as a write-off, failing.
Okay, let's talk about what VCs expect just in a moment.
Okay.
Our show today is all about equity deals here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. We've been speaking with Stinnett about what it takes to finance a startup business. Do you have a business? Are you starting one? What types of financing are you considering or have you used? Share your story with us. Give us a call at 866-712-1300, or you can tweet MYB Media. We'd love to hear about it. What are VCs expecting today?
Well, they want a bigger share of the pot. They want to own this company and take it through to profit. And they're definitely crunching numbers. I mean, earlier we were looking at some numbers that you were looking at and that you were taking care of for a project. And, you know, that's what they're doing. They're making sure that this is viable and that this can go all the way to IPO or an extraordinarily lucrative merger and acquisition. And so, you know, the requirements are very, very strict. And believe me, they know their requirements.
We're going to talk about the upside and downsides of working with VCs after the break. Our show today is all about equity financing for startups. I'm here with my guest, Stinnett Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy. We'll be right back. We're here with Stinnett Marie Rose talking about equity financing, and we were just talking about what VCs expect. And now I'd like to talk about what are the upsides and downsides of working with VCs.
Sure. The upsides and downsides working with VCs, it's very interesting. Immediately, you're upping the ante professionally. So you're responsible to each other. And they'll be making very clear and direct suggestions to the company. Sometimes that can be off-putting because you've had such a friendly crowd prior to this as funders, as in, you know, angel and seed investing. So that's the one big aspect I see when working with venture capital. Their expectations become very clear.
Have you seen this yourself in any particular situations?
Yeah, definitely where you're sitting there with a business and they are doing their best to convey, you know, that they are who they are. And the next thing you know, you find out they're offshore. So in this case, I was shocked. And I went back to the venture capital folks and said, you know, they're offshore. And they're
who's
like,
offshore, exactly?
The ATM switching company, the technology company that was looking for funding from venture capital. And so they were asked to come onshore. And the next thing you know, I got a call from LA, and they had completely moved their company to Los Angeles and set it up as a business and were able to move forward with the next round of funding and moving toward IPO.
So they really had to pivot.
They had to pivot.
It to respond to the VC's request.
Exactly. And, you know, they were my client out of Australia, and I thought because they had enough bandwidth and locations in the United States, they were going to be fine, but they were not. They needed to change all headquarters into the United States, and they did.
And they did that for a particular VC? They didn't just try to go find another VC to back them?
Exactly, because the VC had already, you know, there's always a positive and negative way to speak about VCs, so they already had a relationship, or they already had their hooks into this company, and they didn't want to lose the next round of funding, because these funding rounds can be one, two, or three rounds of funding at a very high amount of capital, and then a mezzanine round.
And would it explain that?
And a mezzanine round just means we're all standing here and we're bringing you IPO and we're going to give you one more pop of capital so that you can do whatever, expand your sales and marketing team, whatever it is that you're trying to meet as objectives.
There have been some really high profile IPOs lately. Maybe we could talk about that for a minute. Facebook, for one.
Right. The up and coming. You know, what is it about Facebook that's being funded? That's a great question. All the listeners should be able to answer that, and they probably can. It's advertising. So it's the amount of advertising and eyeballs to advertising that's being funded. And other people find great value in that and are able to show it up on a actual financial statement in such a way that's under-promised and over-delivered. If that wasn't happening, if it was unclear how the company made money, this would not be considered a hot IPO.
And it continues to be something pretty valuable?
Right. It will be until they disappoint. So as soon as they disappoint eyeballs, amount of people viewing advertising and attracting advertising disappoints, then the house of cards, so to speak, which is the financial statement, begins to erode. And in their case, people are banking that it is not going to be the case, that the under-promise and over-deliver on the numbers is going to be there.
You know, a lot of people wanted to get in on that IPO to invest, but it wasn't really available to the average person.
Right. There's been a lot of inroads made so that the average person could get into these IPOs. In the past, only the very best cream of the crop clients were offered IPOs, and we would call them and say, are you willing to take 5,000 shares, 10,000 shares? That could be an individual who was a very excellent client, or it could be a money manager that was adding it to their mutual fund. So when you see that, you would start to see that they would parlay those numbers of shares out only to their best clients, and then they could go back and say, this red herring, this IPO that we're working on, it's firm. And by firm, it meant it's going to be fully funded and it will not disappoint at the market. Now, a lot of people flip the shares. And at the opening, they look for the highest point in the day. And in that day, they sell the shares and take those profits. And that weakens the IPO. So
did that happen with Facebook?
Not so much. Some of these IPOs are annihilated, you know, literally. They were only hot and for that one day. Why? Because people wanted to get a profit that day.
Can you state an example of that?
Well, you kind of hate to because you could get in trouble.
We won't. Okay. My guest today is...
Probably they're in litigation.
Okay. We don't want to go there.
Yeah.
My guest today is Stinette Marie Rose, and we've been discussing equity financing here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. If you have ideas or questions for my guest, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We're here to answer your questions on the air. What kind of business structure does a company need to have to enable them to offer equity?
Right. Now, the first thing is that you pretty much are not going to be able to do for very long a sole proprietorship. Eventually, you're going to have to go into a different kind of company, SC or limited liability corp.
And that's so you don't have liability.
Exactly.
You're pretty exposed if you're in a sole proprietorship.
Exactly. It's so much better to start to proceed in the right direction right from the start. Also, you are going to need a team. So as you move forward, your business team has to be in place. You actually have to have a board. You have to have a structure for your business. And then as you move forward from there, it becomes a really interesting situation. You create an executive summary. Executive summary is important documentation. It should only be 2 pages. I don't care what anyone says. If it's more than 2 pages, it loses street cred. It loses respect. Being too verbal is not what you want to be on your executive summary. The next is presentations and public speaking. And now we start to move into, okay, great. Did you make the request for capital? Yes. Did you receive some? Maybe they're going to want to see a due diligence packet. And that is bios and addresses and names of every single person that's connected to your business, as well as a client list that they can call and see how satisfied clients are with your services. And once the due diligence happens, which is kind of like an interview, but it's an interview for capital, the decisions to write the check get made.
It seems to me that a lot of people think that if you're building up your social media cred, like you have Twitter followers and you have Facebook fans and all that kind of thing, that that actually contributes to someone thinking that you have something of value. Do you think that's true?
See, the problem with that is that social media doesn't buy the product. And so if you can connect the social media to the purchases, to the sales inside of the, by percentages, you can have a successful link. But folks that are just accumulating relationships, not so much.
Because it's really hard to make that connection between social media and actual sale.
Exactly.
And if you can make that connection, then it has cred.
Exactly.
Although it seems to me there are some investors out there that aren't necessarily demanding that connection.
Yeah, I think that if you are an investor, an angel investor that's not doing that, it could just be that you're not a savvy angel investor.
And that happens.
That's right.
Right?
Yes, because a lot of angel and money comes into the market and wants to do this thing called angel investing, but may or may not have mentorship. And believe me, even angel groups need mentorship and have mentorship. There's two that are like that in that they do a lot of mentorship, and that is Serif, and the other one, and they did InSpa as one of their projects. And Royal Cupcake Royale.
Oh, Cupcake Royale.
Right. And then the other is
That was angel funded?
Yes.
Interesting.
And multiple rounds.
So it doesn't have to be a tech company.
Exactly. How wonderful, right, to see these other things popping up in InSpa and Cupcake Royale.
It seems to me that because bank loans are so hard to get now, that people are looking for these alternative funding opportunities.
Oh, absolutely.
Opportunities as well as way to get money.
Right. When you go to the bank and your I-bond only pays 3%, which is better than nothing, but it's 3%. And then you think, well, gee, what can I expect from an angel investment that's working? And, you know, if you can get with some mentorship as an angel, it's excellent.
I'm speaking with Stinette Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business, and we'll be right back. My guest today is Stinette Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy, and we're talking all about equity financing here today. How do you value a company? How do you know how much equity is in it?
Right. Well, first of all, you take all the parts and you have a value for everything, including the team. So there's there's the value of all the other aspects as well, the product. There's the future value. And so there's something called projected forecasts. And all these valuations matter in that later you're using these valuations as a marker to see, are they meeting or beating or disappointing expectations? So it's really important to understand that once you've got your initial grid of a value on the company, and then you start to see, well, gee, this fellow over here or this gal, they've put quite a bit of money into angel investing, and they were at 3%, but they've added every round. So now they're at 9. Now, angels know that. Sophisticated angels know that. Sophisticated venture capital also know that they want to start funding not in an early stage. They want this company to be very successful raising money. So public speaking and that ability also plays in to raising that capital.
But percentage of what? Like, how do you know how many shares are in
right.
the company?
So what happens is the company goes early on, and sometimes they don't realize this is so important, to an attorney. And I'm going to use an example, but there are many fine attorneys out there, and that's Wilson Sonsini in Bellevue is one example of an excellent attorney. Get the grid for the company evaluated.
What kind of attorney is this?
They do exactly venture and IPO work, so that as a company's growing, they bring them forward. One amazing thing you're going to want on your team are people who can introduce you to other people. So there is still that networking aspect through the professionals you bring on. A lot of times the family attorney comes on as an attorney, and then they have to be released from service because, honestly, you've got to have a certain level that would be able to bring you to New York. So when you see that grid, you see that advice on how much are these worth, each little sector of the grid. Well, this now we're getting some more funding. When is the point it's going to dilute? Meaning the initial investors' share value starts to dilute the more bigger money. They know that, but often they have money too, and they keep funding, and they keep staying in the game. So all of these things need to be thought out. Other people you've given equity that is sweat equity. And when you give someone sweat equity, you want to know that, how much work are they actually doing for that and how much time are they actually spending. And it's really good if the company doesn't curb their enthusiasm and keeps them as excited and happy to be a part of that sweat equity deal as possible.
Getting back to how do we determine what that number is now? Like, is it 10 million shares, 50 million shares? How do you decide what
exactly.
that number is?
It can be depending on if you're going to go to a venture level, you're going to go for a higher value. And so you would...
Higher value of the individual stock?
The whole pie would be a higher value. It's like, are we going to $5 million? And then that's the grid. You put down the grid. You want to know what your goals are. Becomes very important. If you just want to stay local company and you really just want to get bought out, it's a different matter altogether.
So your exit strategy is critical as well.
That's right. Exit strategy is a big determinant in how large of a pie you're building.
So how does somebody who's just gotten seed funding, maybe they have a little angel money and now they're trying to get some bigger money, how can they foresee all this stuff?
Right. It's really important to allow yourself to dream big. And I think that's one of the aspects people from, they say to climb a mountain, it takes a single step. But if you're at the top of the mountain, you can see all the ways you could have taken to get up there. And it's exactly the same with venture capital. You've got to dream big because you know what? If you have a viable business and people are telling you that when they evaluated it, when venture capital people are telling you that, you better dream bigger. So that's kind of the feedback will be a big part of it. And what's your outcome? There's three outcomes. You can go IPO, you can sell it, you can keep it. So also outcomes really matter.
And do you always have to go all the way to IPO?
Oh, no. A lot of projects I've worked on were definitely headed to IPO. And then at the end of the day, some sweet offer came in after it was all cleaned up, after the sales and the marketing, after everything was perfect. And they were under-promising and over-delivering and were profitable, they had a buyout offer.
Right, but couldn't you just keep it and not go
sure.
IPO?
Yes, you can. Those are the three ways, right? You can own it private.
Oh.
You can sell it out or merger it, and you can go IPO.
And when do you know to go IPO?
I think it's really critical that all your funders have to be on deck with it. So if venture capital is just absolutely backing you 100%. Your angels are hanging in with your updates and, everybody, you've managed to under-promise, over-deliver, and not disappoint, and things are progressing on. You bet. If you're getting the kind of feedback that, yes, you're going to get a venture capital and a mezzanine round and start that whole process of the next step to go IPO, you bet.
That's the big money.
That's the big money.
Our show today is all about equity deals here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. We're here with Stinnett Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy talking about all that money exchange and financing and all that kind of thing. And we would love to hear your questions about it. Give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. You mentioned sweat equity. Let's get into that a little bit.
Sure.
So you had people on the other end of it. You've got the VCs and the angels and the seed funders and the entrepreneurs themselves and that kind of thing. But sometimes you need additional expertise or arms and legs.
Right.
And frequently a business doesn't have the money or doesn't want to really pay cash.
Right.
So this is known as?
Yes, that's exactly right. It's sweat equity. And sweat equity came out of the farm. So, you know, mom, dad, and kids. One kid managed to stay behind and work and sweat equity and winds up, what, owning the farm. It's the same idea inside of the venture capital world. It's a sweat equity. You're applying some kind of consulting. You're doing something else. I remember early in the stages of the garbage industry, waste management, people that were driving trucks for free after Sunday to do this trash thing with the founder, whose daughter I am a friend with, they wound up getting sweat equity and shares in waste management.
So from garbage collector to millionaire.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that company went pretty big.
That's right. And so that's the concept behind sweat equity. In my world, I would do consulting fees for a certain amount of dollar for 60 days, and then I would take some shares in the company. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's why I like the cash part.
Has it worked?
Yes, it has worked. And then you have to decide at the end of the day, are you going to stay in it longer and ride the ride or sell it? Often I've sold it.
Before we get to that decision,
yeah.
How do you know you should get in on a deal in the first place? What do you look for?
Boy, you know, it all gets down to people. And if the people are what you consider quality, ethical, not, you know, over-promising. I can't emphasize that enough. You've got to be with a solid team that you believe in. And that team's got to be have some traction with their word. So you can feel it and you can feel the difference.
Let's say it's somebody you haven't worked with before. How do you vet them out?
I ask them to job shadow. That's how I do it. So I actually say I'm going to job shadow you public speaking. I'm job shadow you, you know, in certain instances, certain situations. Let me see you do some selling. And let me see you handle a meeting. You know, let me hear you talk about accountability. How does it work? Because I deal a lot with the CEO. That's who I'm working with because they're going to do the stand and deliver to raise the capital. And so I wind up doing quite a bit of job shadowing. And then once I see what I like, then I say yes.
When you're discussing the deal with the CEO or somebody who is offering you the sweat equity.
Right.
How much should you get? How much should you request? How do you work that negotiation?
Yeah, some people, I mean, you can evaluate your time. And honestly, you can say to yourself, I'm willing to put in all the time that I can into this project for 60 days because you're that enthusiastic about it. That would be 3%. And it would also be a certain amount of cash. So I like to couple it together that I'm going to get paid if it is that kind of thing in lieu of consulting or professional skills, marketing, because that's big. I'll tell you, if people would like to sweat equity for some marketing, there's so many times businesses cannot, that's the piece they cannot afford. They don't have cash, and they didn't raise seed and angel money yet for a marketing component or a division, and they need it badly in order to make the next statistics. And by the way, if you get a chance as a business to give out on a Friday updates, and you can also put the updates in with, we're also looking for some sweat equity on da-da-da. We're also looking for angel money on da-da-da. So it's really important that you do these weekly updates on Fridays, let people gestate it on the weekend and contact you. And by Monday, someone may be funding you or providing a sweat equity professional inside of your business.
You mean putting it out in email?
Yes.
Or posting it on your blog?
Exactly.
Or something like that?
Every Friday. And if you'd like a trick for how to capture the attention of a venture capital person, send them by airborne all your package, your executive summary, your due diligence, and then send them an email letting them know that happened with your executive summary attached. Very often on Sunday after dinner, they're bored, they look at it, they set up a meeting with you.
I love the fact that there's an old school component.
It's
not all digital.
Right.
Like actually getting something delivered to your door has an impact.
It has a huge impact to have to rip open a next day air executive summary and due diligence packet.
So what is it about that package that a venture person would find so exciting?
Well, for one, you know, this is you really reaching them on two or three different levels, on the tech level, in the physical form level. And also, you know, it's your direct communication to them. They know how to contact you. You know, you're not fly by night in the sense that
But you said they were bored.
Maybe
that's why they would open it. What is it in that package that makes them not bored?
It's novel. You know, this is a person that's obviously trying really hard to reach me and reach me personally. You know, it beats the, we used to see these little stickies put on doorknobs with almost a teeny tiny executive summary all over Silicon Valley. You know, this is a personal contact, a personal attempt to reach that funder. And know your funder. Has this funder funded something like you before?
VCs, by their very nature, I would think, are looking for that next deal. That's what drives them forward.
Yeah, that's their job. On Tuesday mornings or one morning during the week, they actually sit down together, 12, 20 people, and pitch their idea. You can't come without, you know, to work without an idea. You know, this is an amazing thing I think people don't realize. Just like mutual fund managers all come with a stock and they have to rationalize why it's going into the mutual fund portfolio, venture capital people also sit there and are looking over the best deal of the week.
You're hearing Sunette Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy give her ideas and thoughts about equity. And you're listening to Minding Your Business. I'm Robin Block. We'll be right back.
Once again, here's Robin.
Sunette Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy is here with us talking about equity financing, and we wanted to hear about some of her success and possibly horror stories.
That's right.
So let's start with the successes.
Yeah. One of the amazing success stories was a lady that came to me and wanted to hire me, and then I said, well, what is it you're doing? And she was a tiny, petite blonde, and she was an RN. And I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting. You know, I mean,
sounds like my mother. You just described my mom.
I'm in the, you know, the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, New York, and I'm thinking, RN, okay, let's see how this is going to go. Brilliant idea. Brilliant. Unbelievable. Her own project, and now you've seen them everywhere, and that is medical vans and buses that go to the location of the corporations. In Silicon Valley is how that started, and then it spread all across the United States. Her key to fame was after we got together and started working together, there was another group called Heart Math. And Heart Math was a fairly popular book and research on how to take care of the heart for anyone, the CEO, the person on the mailroom, everyone. And so she hooked up with the funders of that funding, and the relationship just went from there, exponential. And then she wound up selling it out.
So her company was called?
Right. It was called Mobile Medical. And it was really, initially the venture was just, you know, small. And she wasn't thinking big. Maybe she could get three buses and received the funding for that. Next thing you know, angels really clamored around her and had to teach her, and I had to teach her as well, the value of what she had created in her executive summary. And then when she got her first bus, it was just unbelievable.
So the bus would go to the corporation and
exactly.
Do what?
And administer all medical testing, anything that was needed, all the shots that are needed for going overseas for some of these guys that are traveling. And whatever was ordered up, she had a menu of what was needed and wanted, and she could EKG on location.
It's like that TV show, Royal Pains. They
yes.
have a concierge doctor that works in the Hamptons,
that's
so
exactly
they go
right.
to you.
Yes, that's exactly right. It was concierge medical. That's exactly right. And she just kept building it up, and not by her own, shall I say, forcefulness. you know, she was involved with a good team of funders, and those funders constantly mentored her, and she just profited along the way. She just did great.
And she was smart enough to take the advice. In other words, you see so many people that have a certain expertise, but they don't really know business.
Right.
But she had that medical expertise, but was had the wherewithal to take in the advice, to listen to experts to help her launch the entrepreneurial side.
Right. Often what I'm working on, too, is when a CEO starts digging his heels in because things are moving faster than they ever dreamed. And in this case, it was her case, was it was moving faster than she ever dreamed. But, you know, she didn't dig her heels in, and she did really well. And when they came to buy her out, I mean, no one could have been more delighted than her. She had that was her success.
Do you know what she's doing now?
She's probably cooking up another business. What's happening
now?
She
got the bug now.
Yeah. What happens now is in around the UC system especially, you see doctors and nurses that actually do create a product, or they create a medicine, or they create something that they know a treatment, and they go and get it patented, and the next thing you know, they are what we call flippers. They flip companies, meaning they flip them one IPO after another. And a great example was a judge and a doctor out of the UC system, and he had done that. By the time I started working with him, he had done 4 successful drug companies and flipped them. And what that means is basically the company goes IPO, but then sometimes is bought out by the big gorillas of the industry, and that was his situation. So he was on to his 5th. He is already on to his 5th.
Have you seen that in this market? This is a big biomed market.
Yeah, this market does, but it's quiet. And I'm not sure what the reason is. I would say it's interesting in this market, the Seattle area and the Bellevue area, the Medina area. You know who you are. This quiet funding, this quiet gathering together of the money. And I think there is a kind of a stealth sort of understanding. It's not tooting your horn so much. So I'm watching that, and I'm fascinated by it. Because in the Bay Area and in New York, the tooting your horn thing was rampant. You know, and here is not the case.
So how do you get in? How do you make those connections?
You really do need to go to some of these organizations, like the Koretsu Forum, Handshake, Observe, go to all the conferences. They love still to come to the conferences. Now, they may not wear a name badge and they're not going to identify themselves, but that's where you really actually have to go around and shake hands, old school, get offline, and come and meet these people at conferences.
And be able to tell your story.
Exactly. And pitch your story, right.
I always look for the oldest people in the room.
Yes.
I just figure they're the ones that have more money and more experience.
That's great way to do it. I mean, it took me years to figure that out, that maybe I didn't want to hang out with the fun, happy, let's go have a beverage after work people. And maybe I really needed to sit down and get to know the business of this venture capitalist. And boy, once I found out the amount of mentorship, the desire venture capital people have, not only to make money, but to mentor folks, I was very impressed.
And it can be fun, too.
Yes, absolutely. All these events are fun. I mean, when we go to them, there's a few now, tech events. Real estate's become a really big one because there's an obvious understanding that real estate's at the bottom here. And, you know, so you go to these different conferences, it'll be well worth your while.
So if we had to leave our listeners with 3 things to look for if they were trying to go the funding route, what kind of advice would you give them?
Right. I'd really ask people to have a bigger dream, a much bigger dream than what they currently have, and to allow that to happen. I would also say make sure you underpromise and overdeliver every step of the way, and update people often, much more often than you think. And finally, be sure that you are willing to take no, you know, and move forward past a no. Because there's a lot of no in this business.
And what are red flags?
I think when people try to tell you they are funders and they're really consultants, that's a red flag. You're winding up paying to play. You should not have to pay to play. You should be able to find funding legitimately. And other red flags, I think, are staying inside of the Seattle area too long. Go ahead and stay here, and also go out and meet some people in the Bay Area. Meet some people in New York. We can get real tunnel vision into this small community And I see that as a red flag. And so do the funders.
So you would set up, not appointments, but you would go to attend events in those different
exactly.
markets and then maybe make connections, follow
yes.
up with a meeting, phone call.
That's
that
right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. You should be making a trip to the Bay Area and New York once a year at least.
And that would be a whole lot of fun anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Get out of the rain. Looks like we're out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Annette Marie Rose of Investor Advocacy Financial Solutions. To learn more about her services, call 206-718-5224. For an archive of today's program, links to our guest websites, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at MYB Media. Support for Minding Your Business is provided in part by Sandler Training. Learn more at toptiertraining.sandler.com. From Money Radio, KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.